Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter.
The Boilermakers jump back into the Big Ten race with a double overtime victory at Illinois on Monday and find themselves only a game back in the loss column in the conference. A trip to Bloomington comes up next. More on the Golden Black Radio podcast. I'm Kyle Charters. Brian Newbert here to talk a little bit of basketball. We'll hit Tom Dienhart with some football analysis as well. We're recording this podcast a day later than usual because we did not want it to become obsolete at the tip-off of the game as the rankings became obsolete at the tip-off of the basketball game on Monday and what might have been a first-ever occurrence. Man, there are just not very many games at noon on a Monday. It turned out to be one of the best games of the year, not only for Purdue and Illinois, but perhaps in the country as well. The Boilermakers getting out of Champaign with a double overtime victory. You know, it was a game, Brian, in which Purdue did lose a lead, as it had done in previous losses against Rutgers and Wisconsin, but you had to feel like Purdue played with a lot more poise in this game than it did when it was sort of, you know, almost begging to hang on and then ultimately not hanging on against Rutgers and Wisconsin.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I thought that Purdue did okay, you know, playing with a big lead. I thought, you know, I wrote this a couple times last night, and I don't know if you saw it, that's why you're asking, but I think that they got the ball to Travion Williams a bunch of times, right where Travion Williams wants the ball, right where Travion Williams makes shots, you know, 75% of the time, 75, 80, 90% of the time on some of those looks. And if he just has a normal game in that regard, this game never gets to overtime because Purdue would have executed offensively to the point where this game would have been put away long before the lead got away. Other than that, you know, I think that Illinois just kind of came alive. I think Andre Curbelo absolutely electrified them, and you know, I don't know, you know, I'm sure there were some breakdowns there, but I think that, you know, I think Andre Curbelo just made a bunch of plays, and I don't know how ready Purdue was for Andre Curbelo because he hasn't played in 2 months. And I'm sure that they were aware of the possibility he might play and talked about it and all that stuff, but they also probably, you know, didn't prepare for Andre Curbelo in the context of Kofi Coburn not being on the floor and Andre Curbelo leading an Illinois team that's playing, you know, in a come-from-behind manner. So, you know, I know people get tired of hearing this, but I think it was probably more about the offense, you know, making plays, and it was Purdue breaking down defensively that allowed Illinois back into this. Now, of course, Purdue had a couple of opportunities at the foul line to, you know, change the complexion of the game late. Couldn't make those free throws for whatever reason. That's just kind of basketball, I guess. But I don't think Purdue melted down. You know, I think Purdue did a lot of things wrong, you know, against Wisconsin. Playing with a double-digit lead in the second half, especially defensively. You know, Purdue wasn't very good defensively, and Purdue's gotten better defensively since that. I think Rutgers was kind of the same way. I think this was different. You know, I think the biggest part of this that I keep coming back to is the fact that, you know, how often does Travion Williams go 6 of 18 from the floor? Never.
Yeah.
They executed offensively to the point where they got him the looks that they want to get him. And for whatever reason, that ball just wasn't going in the basket. And if two more of them, if Travion Williams just has a bad shooting game and goes 8 for 18, you know, this game never gets to overtime. But, you know, this is a guy who shoots 60% from the floor and got his sweet spot looks, you know, in that second half when Purdue's trying to protect that lead, and he goes 6 of 18. That's just an outlier, and it'll probably never happen again. So I think, you know, if you're looking at this as, you know, Purdue having melted down, I don't think that's reality. I think, you know, at the offensive end, Illinois did what Illinois needed to do. And for two games in a row now on the road, Purdue took a hell of a run from the home team and managed to steady themselves thereafter. And that's a hard thing to do in the Big Ten, on the road especially.
But
I think they got the shots they wanted offensively. So I don't think this was any huge red flag. I think this was two really good teams playing a really good basketball game, and it's a game of runs.
It is. And, you know, I think it's – I don't know if the numbers bear this out or not. The feel is that it does. I think it's hard to win a game in overtime on the road. And it's especially hard to win a game in overtime on the road when you've lost a lead at the end of regulation, and you've lost, you know, you've lost prime opportunities to put a game away at the free throw line, and couldn't get it done. I think it speaks a little bit to coaching, a little bit to Purdue's leadership, and some of those seniors like Williams and Sasha Stefanovic, and then, you know, in particular in this game, it felt like Eric Hunter Jr., who really now in back-to-back games has had pretty solid outings. And he just seemed in control of things a little bit more. There seemed to be real influence coming from the point guard position, where you just haven't always seen that through the first half of the season. He affected the game in a lot of different ways. And, you know, you don't always need him to score, but you do need him and Isaiah Thompson to be solid all-around players. And I think he got that at least from Hunter on Monday.
Yeah, I think something that's, you know, pretty important to keep in mind about this game, too, is Illinois is really good, too.
Yeah.
So that's part of the story here. I think Illinois is – they got two 23-year-olds in their backcourt. They've got two six-year seniors or fifth-year seniors, two COVID-year seniors, whatever we want to call these guys anymore. Kofi Coburn might be 32 for all we know. You know, I think that – they've got a bunch of transfers, too. These were grown men. And I think something about this game, too, was Andre Curbelo didn't just electrify Illinois. He electrified that whole crowd. And this was something that, you know, Purdue hasn't played in front of many crowds like this before. This was different from Rutgers. This was different from Penn State. And this, you know, for Purdue to have lost those leads and then been able to still get this done against a team full of, you know, grown men who play a certain way, who play with a certain toughness, who play with a certain, I don't know what word I'm looking for here, but it's not complimentary, was a really big deal. And I think in games like that, you need your oldest and most experienced guys to be good. And when you look at, you know, Sasha Stefanovic, Purdue's resident 23-year-old, I think he's 23, I don't know, I haven't looked up his birth date lately. But Sasha Stefanovic, Eric Hunter was really good, really good. His best game of the year. One of the best games of his career, if you ask me. Obviously, Travion Williams didn't have the best shooting game, but he made some really big plays in that second overtime to get this game won. You really needed your experience to match, to kind of rise to the occasion. I think that happened for Purdue. I think Purdue played with a poise, you know, that Purdue wouldn't have last year because, you know, Purdue wasn't as seasoned last year as they are this year. And I think this was a really, really big sort of coming-of-age moment for Purdue here. And I think the biggest part of that was the fact Illinois is really good. And this was an opportunity on multiple occasions for that slippery slope to take hold and for Purdue to get, you know, knocked off here, and for them to be able to keep coming and keep coming and keep coming until you know, until the game was won, that was a really big sign for Purdue, I think.
Speaking of coming of age, Zach Edey's performance was impressive, not only because of his production, but just the way in which he handled himself on a big stage against a big-time player in Kofi Coburn, and just, you know, stared him back down, essentially. I mean, almost literally stared him back down. At times it felt like that he was not going to let the atmosphere or the player that he was facing intimidate him at all. And I, you know, that's pretty impressive for a guy that as we know and we hear about on every broadcast, has not played a whole lot of basketball and is only a sophomore. But, man, he was really impressive. And I think set the tone for the whole game, right, with just his demeanor early on, that he wasn't going to back down from Coburn and from Illinois.
Yeah, Zach Edey won the day yesterday in college basketball. He was the player in college basketball, if you ask me. And I don't know if there were any other games yesterday, but I don't care what happened in any of those games. Zach Edey won the day in college basketball yesterday because this was sort of the ultimate coming of age. And when I keep using that term too much, but I think that this was sort of the dragon Purdue had to slay. And Kofi Coburn, they've never beaten him before, and they've often looked really bad against him. And this was Rocky knocking out Drago, you know. I keep coming back to movies. I keep coming back to the scene in Alien when Ripley comes out in the walking forklift to fight the Queen Alien. That's what. Mm-hmm. That's what that matchup reminded me of. Anyway, I know, right?
Yeah.
I
can see that.
I mean,
Zach Edey, I got what you're saying. Yeah.
Zach Edey didn't only not back down, but he went at Kofi Coburn. And, you know, he had a lot of help guarding Coburn. Purdue did a really good job with help from a defensive perspective, but he went right at that dude. And, you know, it isn't often that when Zach Edey throws his body into you in the post, the other guy does not move. And that's exactly what happened. It was kind of funny early in the game, you know, to watch Zach Edey doing the things that usually cave in defenders, and Kofi Coburn just didn't move. And Edey figured it out. He started going around him and started using his length. And he just played really tough. And he just played with a very distinct edge to him. And I think that was a real growth. These last two games have been a real growth moment for Zach Edey, because his thing, you know, earlier in the year was he wasn't starting games great. He wasn't playing with that edge. And, you know, if he does, you know, I think, you know, the Wisconsin game might turn out different. I think the Rutgers game might have turned out different. I think the NC State game might have played out a little bit differently than it ended up playing out. And obviously Purdue went on to win that game. But he wasn't getting off to great starts. And, you know, that was a big part of the reason Purdue wasn't getting off to great starts. And I think that if that Wisconsin game, you know, was his turning point in that regard, you know, Purdue's going to be way better off because of it. But this was a really big deal for Zach Edey, and this was a really big deal for Purdue, because I do think Illinois was kind of a, you know, kind of a dragon they had to slay, because Illinois really had Purdue's number the last 2 years, the last three or four meetings, whatever it's been.
Why do you think Purdue's been better defensively? I don't think they've been fundamentally like perfect, but it just seems like they're playing harder. The intensity is higher really ever since the Wisconsin game. I think, you know, Penn State was good. Maybe the Michigan game in some way being postponed helped Purdue a little bit to get, you know, an extra day or two of practice headed into Nebraska and then against Illinois. But, Matt, it does seem like, at the very least, Purdue is playing harder on the defensive end.
I think they're just taking it more seriously. I don't want to say they're taking it seriously, period, because I don't want to suggest that they weren't before, but I think they've been more – cohesive. Yeah. They've been more prepared. I think they're probably playing with a different level of focus after that Wisconsin game. I think, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of games now, is that Wisconsin game might have scared them straight in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, Purdue being as good as Purdue's been offensively, you know, for the better part of this season, that might not have been a great thing for them long term, in terms of sharpening their defensive focus, because, you know, the ability to just outscore everyone might have conditioned them to try to do that instead of, you know, playing a more complete game. I think you heard Jaden Ivey after the Nebraska game talking about how he he feels like he's been too focused on offense and not focused enough on defense. That was music to Purdue's coaches' ears. I promise you. You know, Jaden Ivey's an absolutely special player, an absolutely, you know, once-a-generation type of player for Purdue. But he, you know, he didn't have a great first half of the season from a defensive perspective, and I think he's really sort of dialed in now. And that's a big deal because, you know, sometimes your best guy can be a tone setter in that regard, and he's the guy Purdue has to have on the floor, too. So when there's always that guy out there who, you know, might not be as dialed in defensively as, you know, Purdue needs him to be, you know, that stands out. And him having kind of sort of course corrected in that regard, I think is enormous for Purdue. I think that's probably the biggest difference in Purdue here the last three or four games from a defensive perspective. But I also think the Wisconsin game just sort of scared them straight, you know, for lack of a better term, in terms of them understanding, hey, it's the Big Ten now. We're not going to just kind of go out there and score 95 every game. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened the last couple games for Purdue that suggest that, you know, that Wisconsin game, as much as it sucked for Purdue to lose that game at home, might have been the best thing that could have happened to these guys. Because when you look at the way Zach Edey has responded the last few games, when you look at the way Purdue's, you know, played defense the last few games, and that 6 minutes and 50 seconds there late in the first half at Illinois was, you know, that had a lot to do with Purdue. I know Illinois had some good looks, but I thought Purdue, you know, did a great job defensively. And I think that if Purdue can just be an okay defensive team the rest of the year, I think everything's on the table in terms of what this team can do. I think if Zach Edey plays, you know, the way he played at Illinois the rest of the year, everything's on the table for Purdue the rest of the way. That they can still win the Big Ten. They can still make a really, really meaningful run in March, all of that stuff, because, you know, the Wisconsin game has really, really seemed to spur them in the right direction in a lot of ways.
Thursday will be a slugfest down in Bloomington. Indiana, I think, is a much more confident team than what Purdue has probably faced here over the last several seasons, especially the Hoosiers at home. Purdue's going to have to play well, I think, to keep this streak that they have alive against Indiana on Thursday.
Yeah, you always have to play well down there. It's a really hard place to win. Just because Purdue always wins down there the last few years doesn't mean it's not hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, I think Indiana does an okay job defensively. Obviously, you always have to worry about Trace Jackson Davis going off, but you know, I think that, you know, Purdue stacks up really well. I think Indiana is a clear middle of the pack team. I don't know if they're an NCAA tournament team or not. I think right now they probably have a shot to make it, but I don't know if they're an NCAA caliber team. But you know, winning down there is really hard. Winning on the road anywhere in the Big Ten is really hard. This will be Purdue's first experience for most of this team with, you know, an Assembly Hall crowd.
Right.
But what they just saw on Monday, you know, it doesn't get a whole lot more difficult than that. So, you know, Purdue's not going to be walking into something they haven't really experienced before, but it is still going to be really difficult. You know, just because Purdue's won however many games in this series that they've won doesn't mean that, you know, they're entitled to anything. Just because Purdue's the head and shoulders better team between these two this year doesn't mean anything's going to come easily. They're going to have to play really well on Thursday to win that game.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
No problem.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll bring Tom in, talk a little bit of football. That's coming up next on Golden Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, Industrial and Classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. Easton Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chops, salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspiring cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table. As we wait into 2022, JFQ Lending is extending an exclusive offer for Gold and Black members to take advantage of historically low mortgage rates. JFQ Lending will cover any out-of-pocket costs for an appraisal when required. In addition, it will cover the underwriting fee of $1,365. JFQ Lending has a Better Business Bureau A rating with more than 2,000 reviews. It works with top lenders, do the hard work of finding the best deal for you. If you're curious whether refinancing your mortgage is a good decision, reach out to Andrew Hogberg today. Call 480-478-0257 or email Andrew at ahogberg, that's A-H-O-G-B-E-R-G, at jfqlending.com.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
And kind of here with Tom to talk a little bit of off-season football. It's been a busy one, though, so far for the Boilermakers with both the coaching portal, if you will, and the player portal, Tom. The coaching one, Purdue's got some holes to fill there. Now three vacancies, maybe it'll end up with a fourth, perhaps we'll end up with more than that, but those are the ones that we know about or maybe anticipate right now. What's sort of the timeline, you think, that Purdue will have new coaches in place?
Yeah, well, first, just sort of recap what we've got. Of course, assistant offensive line coach Neil Callaway is retired, so that's a vacant spot. Jamarcus Shepherd left for Washington. That was your co-OC slash receivers coach. And defensively, Brad Lambert, the co-DC linebacker coach, left as well. He was the guy, obviously, who pushed the buttons on Saturday. So that's three vacancies. And the fourth you referred to, Kyle, that could open is the cornerback spot. Widely speculated that James Adams could follow Brad Lambert to Wake Forest and join Dave Clawson's staff there in Winston-Salem. So, yeah, I think the I think the DC thing is going to be order number one, Kyle, and they could do a lot of different things there. You know, they could just stay in house and have someone like Ron English call the defense and hire a linebackers coach. But I think that's going to be the top priority there. And then I think the wide receiver spot for finding a replacement there. And then you get to the assistant OL job. And from what I've told Kyle, that they could do one of three things there. You know, hire another assistant offensive line coach. They could hire a guy who assists the line and also coaches tight ends, or they could hire a tight ends coach, which they didn't have a full-time tight ends coach last year. But I think they're going to go with the assistant O-line coach. So, yeah, Jeff Rahm's got his slate filled here trying to get the staff back in order.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the price of success to some extent, right? I mean, you know, you win nine games and some of those coaches are going to be coveted by others. You know, Shepherd's done well with the wide receivers. He's also done well to help Purdue on a recruiting front. That's going to be a pretty big component of hiring these assistants, right? I mean, you've got to replace some guys, particularly, I think, in Jamarcus, who had such a big influence on what Purdue was able to do in recruiting.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You hit the nail on the head. What he meant from a recruiting standpoint, I think, goes without saying. You know, anybody who follows the program knows Jamarcus's what his involvement was from a recruiting standpoint. And my goodness, Kyle, you watched a lot of football in your days. Have you ever seen better receivers than Rondale Moore or David Bell? It's safe to say the two best receivers in school history matriculated to West Lafayette and were developed under Jamarcus Shepard's watch. So you're right. Good position coach, great recruiter. You know what, too, Kyle? You've watched a lot of practices like myself. He brought a lot of energy and juice. And as you know, you need a mix of guys on your staff. You can't have a bunch of old guys. You want some younger guys who really bring a lot of energy. And Jamarcus always brought it every day. It got everybody going, and you need guys like that too. So that's obviously a big loss for Purdue. They think they can replace him, obviously. But like you said, a price of success, a 9-win season, your coaches become hot commodities.
So school has started, classes have started. So this early wave of portal guys probably is done, right? But Purdue's not done, certainly. It still has a couple places of need, maybe the highest priority being at running back, offensive line perhaps in there as well. Purdue will still look, starting now through the summer, for guys who can help them this fall.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Class has started, I think it was last Monday, the 10th. So, you know, if you're a portal guy, you need to be enrolled if you want to take part in spring football, obviously. From my knowledge, all those guys who committed in that big wave in December should be enrolled so they can go through spring drills. So anybody they get from here on out, like you talked about, really won't be able to be part of the program until the summer, since you won't be obviously a full student. So that's not going to stop Purdue from shopping, like you said, Kyle. And running back indeed remains a top priority. They thought they had a good shot at the Kai Thomas kid from Minnesota, but he committed to Kansas. So, again, they're going to continue to look at running back. And offensive tackle, without a doubt, if you'd like to add somebody up front on that line. And, you know, Jeff Brohm has always said, too, Kyle, hey, if he could find another wide receiver, he certainly would take him. If you remember last year, Brock Thompson sort of came out of nowhere. There was no real sense they needed a wide receiver. But they liked the guy so much, they took him. And I really think Purdue would do that with any position, honestly, Kyle. If they really found a kid, even at a position that's not a need, they thought could help, they're going to take him. But, again, if there are priorities, again, it's running back and offensive line.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Take care, buddy.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a wrap on this podcast. That's next. This is Golden Black Radio.
Experience unparalleled comfort, service, and cuisine at the Whitaker Inn. This Midwestern oasis is perfect for a relaxing staycation or weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa, not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics.
All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. Be sure to log on to goldandblack.com for much more after the victory against Illinois and headed into that game against Indiana on Thursday, plus the latest in football news in terms of replacing the coaches and with the transfer portal as well. All right, that'll do it for our podcast. So thanks to our sponsors. And for Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.